All right, let's open our Bibles in continuation of our discussion of the life of purpose. Well, we have been saying many things along that line, and I believe we have been grabbing a lot of understanding. And one of the most important things that we have established is the fact that satisfaction is inside the soul of everybody. That is, the desire for it is inside everybody's heart, and God has ordained that place will be, that satisfaction will be granted you in a particular way. The fact is that people try to get it in different ways. And, you know, depending on the society you are in, all right, they give you different ways by which you try and satisfy that satisfaction inside you. In societies like ours, because of a background of poverty in the whole nation. Now, when I say that, I don't mean families now being poor. I mean the nation as a whole. They are very lacking people. And it may look like they have seen a lot of money here and there, but as a whole, the nation is poor, all right? Now, please, I don't mean Nigeria is a poor nation. I'm talking about the heritage of Africans. Generally, Africans are hereditarily poor. I mean, I'm serious about that, all right? As a people, yes, all right? And that's why we are preaching the gospel of Christ. That is what liberates people out of poverty into blessedness. Now, because of that background, we tend to try to feel important by being rich. You get what I mean? So when somebody has money, he thinks that he's an important person and he feels cool with himself. And the other people think, they look at him and say, he's not like us. He's up there, we are down here. He has, we don't. All right? He can satisfy every desire of his soul. We can't. Therefore, he must be a man that is doing good and he's very happy. So the young man, the young woman is striving to be like that man, trusting that that is where the satisfaction of his soul will come from. All right? But it doesn't work because you didn't make yourself. God made you. In some other societies, I mean, you know, there are places where to be a warrior, maybe in Japanese society of those days, a warrior is a very, very important person. You understand my point? You know, so that people will try their best. I was watching a movie the other day, and they're talking about the Spartans, you know. I've heard of the Spartans. All right? Uh-huh. And then, you know, give it to a child. The child must be perfect. All right? And then the young man is trained not to fear anything. He's trained not to be afraid of anything. At the age of, is it 12 or 10, they take him away from his mother to go and drill him. By the time he returns back home, he's a warrior that's not ready to, you know, to back down from any danger. He knows how to fight men and beasts. So there, to be a great warrior, all right, is a matter of pride. So people will strive towards that, hoping that will give them the satisfaction of their souls. If you grew up in the days of the Greek philosophers, you wanted to be a wise man, speaking plenty of words which have no meaning. You know what I'm trying to say? You keep on philosophizing. What does it mean to be a philosopher? Just a thinker. Sit down there and be thinking. Why should the sun rise in the west or in the east and set in the west? And you have discussions for a long time on why it is like that, even though you don't realize that there's a God that made the stars, that made the sun, and he commanded that that's the way it should be. What I'm saying is that you strive towards excellence in intellectual matters, trying to get satisfaction from it. But Jesus said, my food, my satisfaction comes from only one thing, doing the will of him that sent me and finishing his work. That is, there is a particular lock inside my heart, and there is a key. One key that can fit, and that key said is doing the will of him that sent me. Therefore, if God called me to be a warrior, all right, whether I was a Greek, an African, or a Spartan, being a warrior will satisfy my soul. You follow what I mean? And if God says be a thinker, all right, whether I'm amongst the Spartans or amongst the Africans, that's what will satisfy my soul. And listen, it's a sign of development of a society for them to be able to recognize that people are differently gifted. A friend of mine was analyzing, in fact, as I was walking in just now, my phone rang. I wanted to put it off or ignore the call. And I said it was an international call. So I answered him. I told him I'm about to go and preach. I'll call him back. He's a friend of mine, all right? Called me from abroad just as I was walking in. And once when we were in university, he was talking about the poverty of the Africans. How many of us read it? Things Fall Apart? You know the story, even if you didn't read it. Okonkwo's father. Can you remember Okonkwo's father? Anuka or something like that. Okonkwo's father was what? He was skilled in what? Playing the flute. And nobody respected him because he didn't have plenty of yams. Can you remember? They spoke down about the man. Nobody respected him. He was not liked in the society. He was not respected. Why? Because he didn't have what the society then, all right, took as wealth. And my friend pointed out that, see, that was a great musician. He said, now we all celebrate Mozart and Beethoven and Handel. And that man should have been a Handel, a Beethoven. But because of the poverty of the society, they only knew about yam, yam and more yam. So he was explaining that, you see, that's the problem the African had, that he didn't appreciate art. Now, I'm just bringing up something. But whatever society we might be in, all right, I'm just bringing that. God is bringing us out as believers to develop a new society. So I was saying that a developed society will recognize that each person has a gift. Do you understand? They will not have forced Okonkwo's father to go and start trying to compete with those who had a skill in farming. He will allow them farm, all right? During the day, he's composing new songs. And when they come back in the evening, he will play music that will make their hearts glad. And you say, what's that going to do for the society? Believe me, with that kind of gladness of heart, you will face... Oh, God, get my point. Gladness of heart is important to God. God gives the oil of joy instead of mourning. Do you get my point? The garment of praise instead of spirit of heaviness. When you are depressed, you can never see opportunities. You've heard me say that before. Joy, with joy, that is what how you draw water from the well of salvation. If you are not a happy person, you will never see opportunities. Believe me, if there's no joy in your heart, you won't see the opportunities that are passing by you every day. Every day, opportunities for breakthrough are passing you by. Every day, great things. God is showing you the doors through which you will step and step into great things. But if you're a grumbler, a complainer, a man who thinks that the whole of life is against him, you will never identify any one of them. That's where somebody like Okonkwo's father will have done well to stimulate joy and gladness in their heart. Are you following my point? And they will go back next day and inspiration on how to cultivate more yam will come into their heads. And then for the job he did, he will charge you a fee for coming to hear him play. So you'll be rich farming, he'll be rich playing music. Are you getting my point? So I'm explaining this principle that God has a call for each person's life. And that's what we've gathered to learn in this particular season. Why am I here? What did God call me to do? Are you following my point? And we're talking about the life of purpose. And I've said all of these things to bring out an issue. If you don't identify it, there are two ways you identify it. God either speaks to you expressly, or you simply discover it along the way as you walk with God in an everyday manner that is pleasing to him. You follow my point? Now, if you don't get to that point, there is no how in life you will not be dissatisfied. It's not possible. Listen, people think that Africa has a lot of problems. There's nowhere on earth that has more problems than the other one. Everybody has problems. Everybody. You know, if you hear in Nigeria somebody committed suicide, you know, it's talk of town. You probably have not heard of one case in the last 20 years. Every day in America, people are committing suicide. Every day. Go to, what you call civilized, developed, and prosperous countries. Forget the economic downturn. Before economic downturn, people were committing suicide. In Nigeria, take all the money somebody has. Everything. One thing he will not do is kill himself. If there is life, there is hope. We believe that gospel totally. Believe me. We believe it totally. If there is life, there is what? There is hope. Look, believe me. You know, if you see trouble, there are things you don't see here. You ask yourself, is it that the demons, they leave certain areas alone? A man will just wake up in the morning, kill 5 of his children. How many have you heard of that in Nigeria? It happened a few weeks ago in America. Oh man, y'all wake up. Just kill all his own children. And his wife. Because she wanted to leave him. Shot the woman, kill the children. And say, yeah, now, nobody's going anywhere. Nigerian man will say, may you live long and see what I will become in future. That one day you will regret leaving me. And one day you'll become rich and drive a very big car to the front of your house. Zoom, zoom, zoom. And drive fast. That is the kind of issue we have in life. What is one of hanging yourself or shooting somebody else because somebody is leaving you? We don't have that kind of trouble. One woman in America made me laugh in Texas. Killed 5 of her children. She said she has a mental problem. After she killed the 5th one, she called the police. Do you get my point? He said, now because she's mental. Now only they are crazy. Our people do not they crazy. Come to our road. You see crazy people. Are they killing children?
What am I trying to explain? No matter where you are in life, if that lock and key in your heart does not fit, you will colo outside, even if you have money. You've heard me quote this man once in a while, Paul Getty. He was the richest man in the world at the time. For your information, the man was mad. Maybe that part of it I never told you. He wasn't mad at the beginning, though. At the end of the day, the guy was absolutely eccentric. The Jews ahead of him used to wash his hands, believe everybody had gems. If you talk to him, he believes you are looking for his money. Every day I pray, my God, please, let me never forget that material things don't satisfy. Are you getting my point? You must learn to give your life a meaning. And that's what we are discussing. All right? I'm just going over the things that we have said before. Where we are right now, which is what I want to get into next. Please, there's one point that I should remind us of. Everything that you may ever need in life is found in one place. The center of the will of God for your life. The center of the call of God for your life. That's where it is found. There are spiritual principles. And that's something about Christianity we should get very clear. There are spiritual principles in life, just like there are laws of physics. There are laws of chemistry. There are laws of biology. There are laws of agriculture. You can learn them and make them produce for you. Are you getting what I'm saying? In the same manner, there are spiritual laws in life that a man can learn, whether you're a Christian, Muslim, or a pagan, a Hindu, Guru Maharaj follower, or a Buddhist, whatever you are, there are certain laws that if you follow, it will also help you also. Are you getting what I'm saying? But that's not what Christianity is. Christianity is not how to learn the laws of the Spirit and start operating by them. That's mysticism. Are you following my point? That's not Christianity. Some of this we preach as believers, as preachers. It's pure mysticism. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. That's why I don't like this one of it works. I mean, I told you that even Daniel taught Nebuchadnezzar how to prolong his reign. A lot of rich people are using those. Look, because good works has a kind of power. I heard a gist. I don't know how to, of course, the person quoting it to will say that he doesn't know whether it's true, but it's a book written, all right, by some other writers, not Bible writers now, about the time that Moses led the children of Israel out of captivity. He said that before that time, Pharaoh used to kill, I've forgotten how many cows in a day, and how many goats and fowls, and how many bags of wheat they would make into bread, and feed multitudes. And that when Moses would cry and cry, deliver, God said, what can I do? That man is too good. Not yet. I can't do anything. Therefore, Moses prayed. When God wants to punish people, I told you, God doesn't just wake up and break laws anyhow. When he wanted to bless Abraham, he gave him the opportunities to reach for blessing. Do you get my point? That's why it's important that God works in your heart to lead you in the path of righteousness for his own name's sake. God taught Abraham for years. Finally, one day, they entertained strangers without knowing they were angels. And that was the final straw that broke the camel's back of their blessing. In the same manner, from the story I was telling you, this man, God wanted to judge. So Moses now prayed. Now, this is not Bible. These are just writings. That Moses now prayed, and God took wisdom away from Pharaoh. And what Pharaoh do? Pharaoh now got up and decided to afflict the children of Israel some more. And afflict people. He decided to start reducing the amount of rations that was coming out of his table to feed people. And that was the beginning of his troubles. God said, very fine, we are getting there. And that story said that the day that the children of Israel left Egypt, the day that all the firstborns in Egypt died, that was the day that Pharaoh slaughtered only one chicken. Now, I'm talking about laws, you know, spiritual laws. There's a way they work. And let's not forget that. But Christianity is beyond that level. It's not just about learning the laws and trying to manipulate it for yourself. I'm bringing out something here about being that everything you need is where? In the center of God's call for your life. So that you don't spend all your energy trying to learn spiritual principles, mysticism, which are not wrong. They are not evil. Believe me, they are not evil things. Just like the laws of physics and biology and gravity and stuff like that, they are not evil. All right? Technology is when you have learned those laws and you are applying them to improve your lifestyle. Are you getting my point? In the same manner, you can learn the laws of the spiritual realm. A man told me once, he thought about one man that he knows very well and admires. He said, that man appears very nice. He said, I wonder whether he's really that nice. He said, because I noticed that part of the things he teaches people, trying to package them for business, is how to be nice. There's something people learn to be nice and becomes part of them. The spirit has not really changed, but they go out and they are nice. And you think this guy is very nice. Say, but it's part of packaging for a business. It's good, in quote. It's not a sin. But Christianity, I said, is beyond that level. Alright? What we want is to relate with the God that made the laws. Are you getting my point? That because the greatest law, the greatest law is a law of obedience. He said, the wages of sin is death. No, there's one scripture, the other one I want to quote, all right? Okay, that one also applies. The wages of sin is death, but the free gift, there is a free gift that comes to you in Christ Jesus that brings forth eternal life. And that's what the Bible calls the law of the spirit of life that overcomes the law of sin and death. That's what we're talking about. The greatest law is the law of obedience to the will of God. That's what brings the law of the spirit of life. So when his commandment is, believe on him who the Lord has sent. If you believe it, then suddenly, you don't have to learn all the small laws. Do you get my point? In fact, when you study a lot of physical things, I thank God allowed me some ability to understand science. Albert Einstein was working on the unified theorem. Can you remember that? Those of you who know physics. Trying to unify all the laws of physics. They worked on it for a long time. Spiritually, it's like that also. All the laws of mysticism, they are unified in one thing. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. They are unified in that thing. Because when you are there, then he leads you in the path of righteousness for his own name's sake. Then there are times you are nice, and you are nice because the spirit of Christ in you dictates niceness. And then there are times you are stern and you are firm, and you take a whip in the temple and you whip everybody out of the place. And it is the spirit of God that is leading you in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Are you getting my point? There are times that spirit will rise up and say, pray. And you will just get up at night and say, what is going on? Say, I just feel like praying. And you start praying. And you pray and pray and study. Other times people say, let us pray. Say, I beg, I'm tired, I want to sleep. No matter how hard you try to keep awake to pray, forget, the sleep overcomes you. Why? Because he gives to his beloved even while they sleep. What is he doing? He's leading you in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Are you getting my point? That is why the superior law we are walking towards. Paul said that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. Oh God, I explained that before, that there is what is called the power of Christ's resurrection, which he said every believer should strive to attain. That I might experience what he said, resurrection from the dead. He wasn't talking about if you die or you rise again, because one thing was certain. He himself said that everybody must rise up again and face the judgment throne of what? Of Christ. And give account for the work that he have done. So Paul could not have been using all his life striving to die and rise again, because he knew that even the sinners, the most wicked of sinners, will definitely rise up one day to face judgment. So what was he saying? There's a power of resurrection. Ability, listen. The ability to touch that which was dead and bring it back to life. Do you follow my point? The ability to face sickness, and everybody, and the doctor says, this man is dead. And then following day, you get to his house and he says, well, how far now? You still dead? I thought they said you were dead. He said, I was just tired. The Lord needed me to rest for a while. Now I'm okay. I have rested. It's called the resurrection from the dead. In which they say, capital man, stock market is going down. God, a businessman that has the power of resurrection. Say, fine. Like I told you during the spiritual economic empowerment and development strategy seminar, I said there was a time for those who wanted to make quick money. But God has now opened the door. I'm almost feeling like a prophet. Say, God has now opened the door for what? Owners. Owners. When they say the share price of a bank is going for 30 naira for one, you didn't have money to buy. But over time, God has blessed you. Sin has now dropped to 7 naira 50 kobo for one. He said, good. Time to own it. Believe me, if you have 75 million naira, you go there, buy 10 million shares. Next board meeting, who go say they not here, say you come? You are getting the point I'm making. Yeah, it's important. So that kind of person having the law of the spirit of life, who has attained to this resurrection from the dead, he touches a dying company and he comes back to life. You know what? Sometimes, you know how they sell dying companies? Let me talk to businessmen. Somebody took over one football club in UK recently. I'm not too much of a football fan, so I can't remember the name. I know how much he paid for it. £1. That was a nominal fee. The idea is that the debt, the gbese, that the club is owing is so enormous. Instead of declaring absolutely bankrupt, they hand it over to somebody who says, I can manage it. And he pays a nominal fee of £1. You don't get the point. They look at a big company in Nigeria, for example. Let's assume one bank in Nigeria is so badly broken. They said they want to sell it. And after assessing the people who can buy it, number one, usually such times nobody wants it anyway. You now tell Charles Oludo, I can handle it. It's all right. Pay 100 naira into the bank. That is how much we are selling the bank to you. When Charles Oludo did consolidation at that time, you know that's what he did to a lot of banks. There were banks that recapitalized. Nobody wanted to put his money into a basket. How can a healthy person merge the dying person? Do you understand my point? After everything, some banks were remaining that Charles Oludo had to close. So he said, who wants bank? They called it cherry picking. Pick the one where you want. And I like that one. They have 3 branches in eastern Nigeria. Then they have 1 in the west and 4 in the north. Not too bad. How much? Ridiculous amounts of money for whole banks. Why? Because they are owing money. People are not paying them back. They are owing depositors. When you pay small money for it, you get my point? You have a lot. You are carrying a lot of liability, actually. But let's get back to the power of what? Resurrection. That's how God makes some people prosper. Having attained to the resurrection from the dead, are you getting me? He now touches those things. So what they sold to him last year for 100 naira, a nominal fee of $100. A few years down the line, people are begging him to sell it back to them for maybe 16 billion naira. And he says, I know they sell. What am I going to say? That person may not need all the laws of business and all the laws of networking. Once he knows God, are you getting my point? Once he knows God, the Spirit of God leads him in the path of righteousness. That's why the believer cannot spend all the time, because you can wake up in the morning and confess for your car. Whoosh. I see it's blue, it's high, it's long, it's fat, it's this, and it is blue. And you draw a perfect picture. Every morning you wake up, the car, come, I speak to you. I call it those things, you start speaking all kinds of Greek and Hebrew. I call it those things that be not as those they were. And you call the car for 1 full year. Midway through the 2nd year, God gets tired and says, I will give that boy a car so that he can focus on something else. Say, Lord, very good. I've looked at this car. It's a nice car, but the tires are not good. You go back to your imagination board. You draw tires. Michelin. Michelin. Bridgestone. Comfort. After a while, God says, this guy is not going anywhere. He spent this amount of spiritual energy for just 1 car. If he has spent a quarter of that to dwell in the center of my call for his life, he will have found all the cars he ever needed. Without ever having to focus and confess and try and strive to get one, he will have found it. Are you getting my point? And that was what Jesus meant when he said, my food, my meat, my nourishment, my satisfaction is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. You get what I'm trying to say? That's what we've been discussing. Say, why did God send me here? If I find that thing, there's nothing else I need. The best illustration for that is the life of Joseph. You know of Joseph in the Bible? Joseph did not, you know this one of, write the 10 things you want in your wife and put it on the wall. And then you start confessing it. Every morning you wake up. I thank you, Lord. Because she's 5 foot, 1.625 inches. Say, why that? I want to be very specific. Lord, this is how you describe. You know what happened to Joseph? Pharaoh looked at him and said, can we find a man as wise and as discreet, as skillful as this one is? Seeing that in him dwells the spirit of the gods. Therefore, I will make you in charge. You will go and execute all these things that you have told me that is possible to be done. Come and do it. Meanwhile, no single boys on my cabinet. And Pharaoh looked and said, Potiphar, the chief priest of On, come. Last banquet you came for in my palace, you brought some fine girls. One particular one, there, Bilai said, go feed Joseph. Go bring them. That one said, at your service nationwide. Are you getting my point? Now, so Joseph take a choir wife. And believe me, that woman blessed him. I'm very sure of that. I have proof that she did. Joseph lived to be a very old man. If you have a wife where they worry you, you can't live that long. It could hurt you. Are you getting my point? And so God just did what? He just gave him all his resources that he needed. Because it was doing the will of him that sent me and was finishing his work. Are you getting my point? Therefore, let us labor on that which is important. And that's what we are discussing. Your life is a life of purpose. As you stated again, sometimes, you know, when we discuss with people, it's amazing what people don't know. So we must say some things and say them again. Let me say it clearly. You were born for a specific purpose. Nobody came to life by chance. No, look, whichever way it is you came to life, you were born for a specific purpose. You know, my father never planned to marry my mother. They were just in secondary school. And they were not very serious people. Now, so my mama take get belay, now so they take born. You know that kind of story. You hear it here and there. Let me tell you a matter of fact. That was how David was born. David in Israel. That's not a joke. Something similar to that. They were not in secondary school. Alright? Yeah, I'm telling you. That's how David was born. I don't have time to discuss that one details, but you hear that in sin did my mother conceive me. We have always said that it means that all of us were born with sin. Crap. That was not what he said. That was not what he meant. What he said was that my father and my mother were committing sin when I was conceived. Why do you think when they say bring all your sons, he didn't bring David? Why? Why do you think his brothers did not like him? Why? When he went to the battlefront, the brother said, you troublemaker, he has come. Are you getting my point? Yet, very few people were more born on purpose as David was. I don't know where my father... My mother was pregnant that time we were in America. They just came back home. 2 weeks before I was born. That's what they're going to take from you. I'm going to be American citizen now. There are those who are still lamenting, angry with their parents. When they were going abroad, my father traveled and said my mother should wait behind and deliver first. And they have bombed me for UK. And my mother was pregnant with me that time. Now they come bomb me for Lagos. Well, you see, now, don't go. Because we think that promotion comes from the east or the west or the south. We have forgotten that God is judge. And he lifts up one and brings down another. And any door that God opens, nobody can shut it. Are you getting my point? If God is lifting you up, who can close a door against you? Nobody. I'm emphasizing again. Maybe you've gone to school, you see your friend. Your father loves him so much. He has everything. Every time you go home, your father and your mother, they are always quarreling. You have run away from home. You know the interesting part? I know something about human beings. We never get used to bad. A bad thing is a bad thing. You think that because a child was born, sin quarrel, he will get used to quarrel. He may become hardened, all right? But he still knows that this is not the good life. As a little boy, as a little girl, they will have known that this is not how life is supposed to be. If you've gone through all kinds of hassles, and you say, God, why me? That's the next thing. God gave, look. Wait, let me ask you a question. Was it a mistake that all the hotels in Bethlehem were full when Jesus was going to be born? You don't know that some angels just went and took rooms just to close the place. They just walk and say, any room here? They say, room day. Room day, how many rooms? Say, six. Very good. You say, they come. Suddenly, six angels will appear. One room each. Yeah, take the room. This guy must not be born in a comfortable place. And they led them, what am I trying to say? They led them until they got to where? The manger. Just so that he might be born in the manger. Are you getting my point? So, where you were born, very perfect. Very, very what? Perfect. Very perfect. Why? Because God was preparing you for a purpose. If you read the scriptures, talk about Jeremiah. Before you were born, I knew you. Paul said, God who called me from my mother's womb. We think that that's a calling for all great apostles and great prophets. Listen, let me say it again. The only reason you hear of such stories is because those guys answered the call. There are many Jeremiahs that God called. And he said, his angel, if you come near again, if you come near my gate, call me anything again, I will set you on fire. The angel will leave. And the story of that prophet, you will never read it. When we're doing a school of Bible exegesis that I'm studying Genesis, I experienced something that I discovered when we're reading from Genesis. God, I'm so thankful to God who allowed us to go to that study. You know what I discovered? That the story of Genesis was drawn from Adam down to Abraham. A single line, go and read it. The branching off was never significant. They just discovered it in passing. And in fact, the branching off you found along the line is so as to explain to you the connection Abraham had or the descendants of Abraham with some other people they will meet. For example, you will understand why God said to the children of Israel, don't go near the land of the Edomites. Don't go near the lands of the people of Mount Seir. You wouldn't understand that except you knew about Lot. Are you getting my point? Except you knew about Esau. Except you knew about such people. You wouldn't understand the story. So God would say, those people, don't go near. I give them that land as an inheritance. Don't touch. There are things you won't understand. So, in fact, remember what I said? You wouldn't even understand why God said it is the land of the Canaanites we are going to take. Because there was a curse that was upon them. Cursed be Canaan. That was why Moses wrote, cursed be Canaan. I have studied enough and I'm persuaded that what Noah actually said was, cursed be Ham. Except that Ham had four sons. Cush, Put, Mizraim, and Canaan. Canaan was the one they were going to take the land. So when they were narrating the story of Genesis, they decided to focus on the issue of Canaan. So he said, listen, Ham and his descendants were cursed. But the one we concern us right now is Canaan. The curse has been activated in the life of Canaan specifically because of his works. Therefore, we are going back to take that land as a fulfillment of a curse that Noah placed upon Ham and his descendants. Are you following my point? What am I saying? You read the story of Genesis down through Abraham. And when we were discussing it then, I said, you know why it was drawn like that? Because Abraham answered the call. There's no proof. I know enough of spiritual things to know that God didn't even need to even prove it to us, but that it could have happened. I'm not saying it happened for certain, but it's one of those things that could have happened. It could have happened that God called somebody else. In fact, he sent out calls, one after the other, to like 10 people. As he's finishing, one person doesn't answer, he goes to the next person. He finally stopped when he got to the life of who? Abraham. And you read the story of Abraham because Abraham answered. I hope you're following what I'm saying. What am I saying? No matter the circumstances of your life, it doesn't mean you were not called. Are you getting my point? And in fact, there is a specific calling attached to the circumstance of your life, which if you don't answer, please get my point, which if you don't answer, another story will be told of the effect. Listen, they will tell you that if a girl was born in a broken home, or a room, of course, a home that was raised in a broken home, all right? And a man was raised in a broken home, and the two of them marry. The chances of their marriage is breaking also. Are you get my point too? They tell you it's 75%. And I'm not saying they say that, but things like that occur. They say if it's only one of them that was raised, and maybe the chance will be 50. And, you know, they tell you all kinds of stories. And that story will continue to be so. All right, in the life of everyone that doesn't answer the call
of why God allowed him or her to be raised through that kind of family. Are you getting my point? That is why, listen, no, this is the reason. Alright? Why, as a believer, you must follow God totally. So that your life will not be given as another example of failure. I hope you're getting my point. And that's why believers shouldn't walk like the world. I've said it before, expect a miracle. Expect things to be different in your case. Stop reading statistics and medical history and use that to predict what your life is going to be. That is wrong. He said, behold, I do a new thing. God is trying to do something new. So we know the circumstances appear to always turn out like this, but that's because nobody agrees to answer the call. I hope you're getting my point. That is the reason. So they say, Africans, they are born in poverty. And I've told you, Nigerians should stop talking about poverty. Believe me, how many of you have never gone to the depths of northern Nigeria? If you have never been that far, put up your hand. Please put it up properly with pride. You've not crossed middle belt to go into the depths of the northern part of Nigeria. Put up your hand. Good. If your hand is up, you have never seen poverty. Put it down. I assume you have not been to Bangladesh. You have not been to Haiti. All right? If your hand was up just now, believe me when I tell you, you have never seen poverty. You think you have. You think the beggars on the road in Enugu are poor. Believe me, those guys earn a few thousands of naira on a daily basis. That's why they can't stop begging. People say, what are we doing to get the beggars off the road? Until you transplant his brain, he's not leaving that place. Until you transplant that skull of his, ain't going anywhere. Please, I'm going to bring us something anyway. Look, an average Nigerian has never seen poverty. He thinks he has. The other day we saw the lecture given by Muhammad Yunus for the work he did in Bangladesh, his native country, on alleviating poverty. After I studied the book, my friend and I said, do you know the kind of poverty that man is dealing with? No, in southern Nigeria, it's not to be found. Oh God, I wish you would get the point. It's not to be found. I have never seen it. Never, ever, ever seen it. Not even in Lagos, where the poorest of people are. You don't know that's where the poorest people are? In Lagos. The richest people are in Lagos too, materially speaking. But the poorest ones, now then they do. You know what it means? When a man can't go back home and call this place my home, that's the depth of poverty. If that same person just retrace who his grandfather was and go back to that village, instantly he has a house. Can be a hut, but his own. I digress a bit, but I hope you get something along there. I'm not going to say, look, a Nigerian, stop complaining. If all these international agencies would ever talk to me, they won't send 1 naira to Nigeria again. I'll say, why are you wasting your money? Free Bibles. That's the one that annoys me. Free Bible to Nigeria is against the will of God. Why? We don't need it. We can buy the one that has money on it, cost. And peradventure, somebody doesn't buy it, he doesn't want it. What am I saying? You're not even poor. That is, Nigerians are not even poor. That's the point I'm saying in all of these things. We don't even know the meaning of poverty, most of us. Just because you don't have a car, you think you're poor. Ah, God. But you never see poverty. Say amen. Anyway, let me say this on my message. That was just digression. What's the point I'm making? So when people have, maybe they come from poor backgrounds, of course, relative to some Western countries, you say, okay, maybe Nigerians, African countries are poor countries, relative to some of those people. So they now start telling stories. That is why nothing good happens. That is why. And we keep on telling that story. And we don't answer God's call upon our lives. And we follow the path of everybody else into obscurity and mediocrity. Are you getting my point? Then people start telling stories when they want to counsel their children. Listen, no. You know that time that this man was getting married, I told him not to marry somebody from that area. Or whose father divorced the mother, or the mother ran away from the father, or somebody scattered somebody. You know, I want him. They say, yes, Papa, you want him. You know, like the home video. Now you are following the same path that he followed. What do you think will happen to you?
No, I said, please make sure that your life, nobody can ever give you as a reference of why people shouldn't do that which is right. Now, people keep on telling those stories. But the truth is that the reason why that man ended up suffering his marriage is not because of where he married from.